Welcome to the Last Round MMA.
The guy's never beaten me. In order to be the champion, you have to beat the champion.
A podcast for the MMA fan.
Imagine that. Look at everybody up here. They're all dressed like me. They're all trying to talk like me. They're all trying to be me.
Bringing you in-depth interviews and more from across the MMA world.
This is like pride. You know, everybody's here. I feel great. And, you know, I can't wait. Saturday night, I'm going to crush this guy hype.
Are you ready? Let's start the show.
Welcome to the Last Round MMA, and today we have the voice of UFC Invicta Cage Warriors, Joe Martinez. Thanks for joining me, Joe.
Hey, good to be here. How are you doing?
I'm good. No better place to start than at the beginning of your journey. So how did you get into combat sports as an announcer?
I literally fell into it. I broke my wrist in high school, quit playing soccer, started announcing baseball, and along the way met just the right people. And I had a guy vouch for me years and years ago as an announcer, and a promoter called me, and the guy pretty much told him he was my uncle and asked me if I could do a show for him. And I said, yeah. So that's my first taste of boxing. That was back in 2000. But yeah, I had been doing baseball since 96, pro baseball since 96. And I mean, once I picked up a mic, I knew it's what I wanted to do.
How did you get your first taste? It was like announcing at school, right? Like as a joke, I think.
Yeah. Actually, when I was in high school playing soccer, we actually shared the locker room with the basketball team. And when we would play, we'd come in, change to go home. They're coming to change to go play. And I started announcing the guys as they were coming through the door. And the coach heard me, and he says, oh man, that'd be great, you know, if you did our games. And I said, I'd love to, but the athletic director actually said no, that no student would be announcing anything at the school. It was pretty a big shot in the ego, I guess, maybe with the ego shot to the ego. Not that I had one, but just disappointment more than anything, because depriving a kid of an opportunity to do something positive. I mean, it's not like I was saying, hey, let me sell crack on campus.
Right. So that led you to working for
selling crack on campus.
So the first kind of main role was working for Lake Elsinore Storm. Is that right?
Yeah. Back in 96, I actually went down there, and they were having auditions, and auditioned for the team. Had no idea where the stadium was, no idea where the town even was. It sounded kind of cool. Anything with a lake in the name sounds neat to me. So went down there, auditioned, had a great time, and then got the call maybe a month later and the offer. And I was there 22 seasons. You know, I've done over 1,500 games for them, and just a great relationship. I mean, my kids grew up there. My daughter's first job was there. It's just like lots of great memories, you know, come out of that experience, that time. I mean, at one point, half of my life, I was at that ballpark. So it's just, they always will hold that place in my heart and in my life. And I mean, I'm just beyond grateful for that opportunity and the years that we were able to be together. It's really great.
What does an announcer's audition consist of?
You know, it's just basic reads. You know, they'll give you some script, you know, read this promotion, read this ad for us, announce a couple of batters. And really that's it. I think I'm more conversational. I don't read script verbatim. I tend to just throw it in as like, I'm talking to you right now. Like, mm-hmm. You know, hey, let's go on down to Circle K and grab a Slurpee after the game today. What are you going to do? You know, it's something just to keep it more conversational rather than, you know, and then that's it. Just adds to it a little bit more. Like I do baseball now. I'm doing a little bit of AAA baseball here in Atlanta for the Stripers, the Braves AAA team. And, you know, the script says, hey, let's go to Mike down at the sushi shack. You know, I'll say something different, like, man, a sushi roll sounds great. Now, I think you got just what I need. And then, you know, we go through it. It just makes it a little more conversational and fun.
So what came next, Golden Boy or WEC?
Actually, Golden Boy did.
Golden Boy was next up.
Yeah, I did this TV show in 2002 called The Next Great Champ, and it was on Fox. And I think we got canceled after four episodes. And then they shipped it over to Fox Sports, started showing the whole fights in their entirety, which was great for me. I was working this, I was a sports editor for a newspaper up in the high desert in California. And man, I wanted to get out of there, Mike. I was like, what's it going to take to get out of here? And I was still doing announcing, still doing baseball, a little bit of boxing here and there. And then that opportunity came along and they asked me to come down and do it. And I said, yeah, great. So I did all the ring announcing for the show. And then when it got canceled and shopped over to Fox Sports, we had to go back in. And then they asked me to do color on it. And I was like, yeah, for sure. I can do color. You know, I can tell lies. No problem. So I go and do that. And it, but what was great about the whole thing was it had allowed me to make enough money where I could quit that job and give myself a real shot at pursuing, you know, the ring announcing. So I moved down to like LA, Seal Beach, that area. And shortly after that, I got a deal with this company called Guilty Boxing. And we were doing shows, like 48 shows a year. And just back and forth, Mexico, like Tijuana, back up to Vegas. Every week, you know, we were at one or the other. And then, you know, it just grew from there. And actually, it died from there as well. Because I went through about a year of just dormant. You know, my career was like definitely going nowhere. And then I ended up getting a demo reel put together and started just sending that out to promoters. And that's what I tell guys that contact me, like, how do I get into it? And I'm not going to take you serious until you have a demo. I won't help anybody. I'll tell them, here's what you need to do. So anybody listening, if you want to get into ring announcing, how to do it, get a demo. And it doesn't matter. You don't have to be at a venue, stand in front of someone in your room or have somebody record you and just announce a fighter. Announce a venue wherever you're at and just make it sound real, because they don't really care where you're at. People just want to hear you and how you present things. So that's why I say get a demo. And then what I did was I sent my DVD out to every promoter I could find. I contacted the California Athletic Commission, got everybody's email, got everybody's phone number, and just said, boom, here you go, boom, and send it. And, you know, eventually maybe you get a phone call and you grow from there.
And is that how you managed to pick up Golden Boy?
No, actually, the way I got Golden Boy was through another audition. They had posted an audition for their show on HBO Latino, which was going to be a Spanish broadcast. I went down, I auditioned, I got the part. And never got used, crazy enough. I was called to do one show and it didn't even happen. I was like, geez, man. But I mean, I stayed diligent. I kept my relationship with them close. You know, I'd reach out every couple months and seek an opportunity. And then WEC came along and I was actually out at dinner with my wife and I got the phone call from Peter Dropick over at WEC and just presented me with that opportunity. But I had already done WEC before Zuffa came into the picture, before they, you know, acquired them. And that was Reed Harris. And Reed called me, you know, years ago and he offered me a show in Lemoore, California. I went up there, did that. And that's where it all began.
At one point,
I still talk to Reed today.
At what point in your career did you realize, okay, this can be a full-time job, you know, instead of, you know, thinking, okay, I can do this just on the side?
You know, I never did. I never realized that. I've never been comfortable looking at it like that. I'm thankful for every single opportunity I get, because I've been down that road where I had the 48 shows, you know, I was traveling constantly and thinking like, this is never going to go away. And when it went away, it caught me so off guard. I was so unprepared that I didn't know what to do. Now, I had a college degree. I still couldn't get a job anywhere. So I ended up working in some construction, you know, tying rebar, you know, just anything I could do to stay afloat. Work at like Circuit City was a thing back in the day, electronics store, just to make a couple bucks because, man, I was going nowhere. I was absolutely broke, you know, and by the grace of God, you know, things started to pick up and we got back into it. But no, I've never been comfortable because I know at any moment a pandemic can happen. I mean, we've all, I think, in the last 2 years experienced the ultimate fear of what the heck am I going to do now? And that's something as in my profession that I deal with constantly. Like, if they pull the plug on this, what am I going to do? You know, so you try to make your choices, financial decisions rather, good ones. And I tend to not do that either, but you can't take it with you when you die, right?
When you decided you wanted to become a ring announcer, was there any other, you know, old school ring announcers that you looked at, you know, where David Diamante has that style, you know, where he repeats the name twice?
Yeah, no, I didn't. I've always respected two gentlemen in the profession that I looked up to, grew up watching, and that would be Jimmy Lennon Jr. and Michael Buffer. Both stylistically, I think, are the top of the food chain. And as far as voice quality and presence, and that's who I kind of believe that I hybrid myself after, like a mix of both. I like the energy that Michael brings. I like the tone, and I appreciate the class of Jimmy, and how he can you just know you're getting quality when you see either one of them. That, okay, I'm going to pay attention here, you know, and it adds value to a show. So that's what I wanted to be. I wanted to be added value to anybody I worked with. And I wanted them to know that I appreciate them, that, you know what, they chose me, so I choose them. Like, who do you like? You like people that like you, right? You don't want to hang out with people that bring you down. So, yeah.
Did you say that to Bruce when you met him for the first time, when the UFC took over the WEC?
No, I didn't pattern myself after Bruce. Michael. Michael Buffer, his half-brother, the older one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and then Jimmy. And I've only met Bruce once, and it was very brief. Matter of fact, we didn't even have a conversation. I was working a fight, and he came up and said, "Hey, Joe." And I said, "Hey, Bruce." And that's as many words as we ever said to each other, too.
You've announced that, you know, a lot of different sports. You've done some stuff with the Harlem Globetrotters in basketball, baseball, boxing, MMA. Yes. Is there a huge difference in how you announce and the style that you use for each crowd?
Yeah, definitely. With baseball, I definitely have a lot more fun. It's less scripted for me. I can really show my personality and joke. People find out that I have a sense of humor and they're like, "Oh my God, you're funny." You know, and it trips them out. And I'm like, I'm no different, but that's because they only see Joe Martinez in the ring. You know, they don't know me outside of it. So it I guess could be a bit shocking to people when they find out that I'm actually a freaking joker, you know. And, you know, my goal in life is to enjoy every moment that I have, because it's fleeting. It's a very short life that we have. And we do want to enjoy things. We want to make good choices along the way too. But, you know, you pick your battles. Like I was, you know, in baseball last night, this kid goes, he says, "You know what, man, you really add a lot of life to this place." And I said, "I think it's something we should all aspire to do in anything that we're doing." Because if, like, for example, working in baseball, it's a sport that I enjoyed and loved and grew up appreciating. And to get to work into it, you know, to get to work in the, that capacity, I'm just like, wow, man, this is great. I never want to take it for granted. So I want to constantly enjoy it, because when I quit enjoying it, then it becomes work and the fun is gone. When the fun's gone, you know, it's just like it gets stale, you know. So trying to keep things popping and energized, you know, and not mundane like some of these guys. Like I walk to the back and the people running the camera operators and directing, it's just, it's crickets back there. Nobody talks, nobody laughs. And I'm just like, hey, you guys need to keep it down back here. You know, you're a little bit out of control. Yeah. So yeah, just keep it moving.
What is a typical, you know, fight week schedule for you, you know, from, you know, getting the call, going to the event?
So the more difficult shows I have to do would be boxing. And I only say difficult because it's just time stuff. Showing up on, like, for a Saturday show, getting in Thursday, doing a weigh-in on Friday, maybe sitting down for a format meeting, and then Saturday doing the show. UFC, I fly in Friday, I do the show Saturday, I can even red-eye home after the show. So it's very nice. I get all my notes early, like the whole week. I have a week to prepare. I do all my cards on Thursday. Like tonight, I'll do my cards. And then I'll send them over to UFC so they can review them and make sure we're all in line, all my stuff's correct and matching with theirs. And then Saturday is showtime, and we're already on point. The only thing we got to do is the show.
What do you mean by cards? Can you tell us what's on the cards?
Oh, my cards. So just my note cards, you know, so name of the fight, like 3-round featherweights. And then the way I write out my cards are style, height, weight, record, where they're fighting out of, and then their name with the nickname attached in there. And I do my cards in blue and red. I have the blue corner, the red corner, whichever's going first. Present the fight, hop out of the cage, and I'm done.
For the, has there been any names, difficult names that, you know, were hard to pronounce? And what do you do? Do you go and ask the fighter how they want it pronounced?
The beautiful thing with UFC is we have a name file for every single fighter. And it's them saying their own name. So that gets sent to us. And if it's John Anik or if it's Brendan, we will sit down and just go over names real quick if there's any different ones. Because sometimes you'll hear a fighter say his name and it might be said differently on the broadcast. So we want to make sure we're saying the correct way to each other, so the broadcast is, it matches up. But I tell the fighter, I'm more concerned about saying the proper city pronunciation than their own name. Yeah, I want to get their name correct 100% of the time. I mean, I pride myself on that. And I think it's been noted and people actually pay attention to it. But saying where they're from, that city, like I'll walk up to them and say, hey, I got your name down, but I need to know how to say the city you're from, because I know to you and to your people at home, that's a lot more important than your name, you know.
Do you have any rituals or a routine or a certain meal that you eat, you know, just for luck?
No, black licorice, green M&Ms. No. Nothing like that. Just, you know, a little prayer before I walk up there, just that I glorify God in all things that I do, and that I pray for safety over the octagon or safety over the ring that night, and I pray for safety in the stands, that the fans, you know, make good decisions, and we all walk out of here tonight, you know, alive and well.
Is there anything, it may seem like a silly question, but I'm sure, like, you know, singers and stuff like that, you know, have to avoid certain foods? Or I know people say that, you know, when you use a plane, sometimes the air conditioning in the plane can affect your voice and leave you a little bit raspy.
Mm-hmm. I'm probably a bad example because I drink. The only thing that I try to not drink is cold water, but I still drink cold soda. You know, I might pull out a Mountain Dew or a Monster just to kind of keep myself, you know, energized, because, you know, oftentimes I'm on the West Coast. I live on the East Coast, And when we hit, you know, 9 o'clock at night, it's already midnight for me. So I'm in wind down mode. So I need to make sure I'm still good, you know, good to go and not falling asleep. Professionally, I think you should definitely avoid any cold drinks. They're not good for your voice. But room temperature water is great. Hot tea and honey, those types of things. Do I drink them? Very rarely. If my voice, if I feel like it's straining a bit, my cords might be hurting. I have a lozenge called Vocal Zone that I'll take. And I try not to take those on fight day. If I do take them on fight day, I take them way before the show because they might numb your cords. And, you know, it's more of a something you would take to relax your voice, not to get ready to use it.
What do you think is the biggest misconception of your job? I'm sure everyone thinks that you just fly first class. You just turn up at the event. You just read a piece of paper, announce the names, and off you go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's definitely a misconception. I study. It's not as easy as people think. Yeah, maybe it sounds easy because you can do it at home. But when you're in front of a camera and there's millions of people watching, or you're in an audience and there's thousands of people screaming, you know, it's a different ball game. It's like what Mike Tyson said, everybody's got a game plan until they get punched in the face, right? Mm-hmm. I think everybody can announce until they have to speak, you know, in front of an audience. So, you know, that first class, no, don't get that. I fly coach and I stick with Delta because when I hit a certain milestone, I get automatic upgrades to Delta Comfort. Sometimes I get blessed with first class, but those are far, far in between. And probably another misconception is that everybody on TV is rich. You know, we all work. Some guys are well off, well to do. But I bust my butt, man. I mean, I've sometimes gone. I've had 62 shows in a year, 54 shows in a year, 48 shows. But thankfully, I'm at a point in my career where I'm able to not have to bust my butt so hard because I put in the work a long time ago. I mean, my first show, I made $200 and that was really good. And that's the kind of level I was at for a while. But I think you build a brand and my thing was too, is try not to say no to opportunities. Don't ever be too big for somebody. You know, I'll take time to talk to anybody that wants to pick my brain about it. And I will also help a promotion out that doesn't have a big budget. You know, if he says, hey, dude, I only have, you know, $500, then I'll say, okay, well, I'll help you out for $500, you know, if I can. And I try not to do it too much because, you know, you can't say yes to everybody. But every opportunity that I've said yes to has always either help somebody to get further along, or it's helped me as well to get, you know, a different or add on to my my resume and build relationships. But relationships is what it's all about. You treat people well, and you hope to have that reciprocated, and we all grow together.
Any stories from when you came up? Because we know the boxing world can be a bit of a sleazy business about not getting paid or.
Yeah, no, that's happened to me quite a few times, actually. Even recently, it happened to me within the last maybe 7 years. It hasn't happened since then, but, you know, this guy would write checks and I'd go cash it. And next thing I know, I'm getting hit back from my bank saying insufficient funds because this check didn't clear, you know, just that stuff. And then I call him, I'm like, hey, man, this is like three times in a row, dude. You know, what's going on over there? He goes, well, you want to get paid right after the show and then you go cash the check. I'm like, yeah, exactly. I mean, that's, don't we all? He goes, well, I need you to wait until the money's in the bank. I said, okay. Well, you need to kind of tell me that because now I'm getting fees because your checks aren't going through. But I just bounce on those guys, man. I can't live that style. Yeah, so I'll send another one of my ring announcers over there and just warn them ahead of time. Hey, dude, if you can get cash, and because this, you know. But yeah, no, it happens. And I've had to chase people down for money. I've had to follow promoters after shows that were notorious for not paying. Like, oh, I'll get you at your hotel. I'm like, yeah, but we're at different hotels. Well, I'll go to your hotel. I'm like, no, I'll take it now. And then, you know, because I got to fly out in the morning. So I don't have time to be messing around with people. So yeah, I have puppy dog people, just follow him around everywhere he goes, make sure I don't lose sight of him so I can get paid. And maybe they're annoyed, but hey, you know what, I got a family to feed, so whatever it takes for me to get my money, I'm gonna get it.
How do you think you have developed and changed as an announcer, you know, to the Joe Martinez that first started at Lake Elsinore?
Well, I've definitely grown up a lot. I was very immature for a very long time. And I think that humility came, you know, after that time when my career just went dormant. And I probably needed it. I need some humble pie and really put a lot of things into perspective, you know? So that helped me to grow up and, just like I said, appreciate the opportunities that are available to us and people. I've always treated people well because I'm a people person. I like to entertain people, and that's my form of entertainment, you know, being able to share my knowledge, my humor, and my time. I think time is very valuable, and when you're able to take somebody's time, we need to appreciate it. And a lot of people have given me their time and I've learned from them. So I feel like it's necessary for me to do the same. And I didn't have that type of upbringing in my career where I had somebody mentor me and show me the ropes. I just kind of had to figure it out as I went. And, you know, when I left WEC, I said some things I shouldn't have said, you know, publicly. And it was kind of very immature of me, but thankfully it didn't sting me to the point where it affected my life, you know, my career. We were able to rekindle that flame we had with WEC, and then I was, you know, brought back on for UFC. And it was just a growing experience for me.
You did, you know, Triple G, Canelo. You recently announced your first UFC pay-per-view, UFC 267. Do you ever get nerves?
No, I wouldn't say I get nervous. I get anxiety. And that anxiousness is because I want it to be over with. The 267 show that I did, when I get sent an opportunity like that, I don't tell anybody. I don't boast about those types of things. Even if it's a Triple G Canelo pay-per-view, I don't tell anybody until it's over with, or if they see me and they say, hey, great, you know, and that's when I'll share, because I don't, first of all, like trolls. That's why I don't have social media. You know, I know everybody's got a flavor, and some people choose me, some people can't stand me, you know, and it just comes with the territory, being in the public light. But I like to, like I said, pick my battles before and try to keep those people away from my life, because that energy is draining. I don't need people hating on me when I'm in an opportunity or I'm in a situation that matters, you know. And not that anything is less than another, but for 267, it was like I was very quiet about it. I told my wife, I told my mom, and I told my brother, the only people I told on this planet. And when I got to Abu Dhabi, I was just inundated with messages, you know, from people doing podcasts and people doing articles, and then people sending me articles like, Bruce is sick, he's not going to be there, and Joe Martinez is going to be, you know, it's like, who's going to be there? Who's going to be? And it's like, oh God, I did not want this. I just wanted to do the show and be done and go home. That's all I wanted to do at 267. Of course, when the show gets going, you know, I try to process everything in front of me and keep those voices out of my head. Because oftentimes, and I've shared this before, like I had so much anxiety, like about a year and a half ago at UFC, where I would get in there and I would feel like I couldn't breathe. And it was like I just wanted to announce the fight and get it over with real quick. And it was just one fight. So I get up there, I do my intro, things are going smoothly. And then I turn to do the blue corner, and all of a sudden I'm short of breath. I'm like, the mixed martial artist, 6 feet, 1 inch tall, you know? And I'm like, what's going on here? And I jump out of the octagon when I'm done, and I go to one of our audio guys. I'm like, bro, did you just hear that? And he's like, what? I said, I can't breathe. I don't know what's going on. He's like, do you want me to call someone? And I was like, I think I'm going to be okay, but dude, what's going on? You know? And then it went away. But I think what happens to me is I start hearing those voices. I start hearing the negative people's comments or just the enemy attacking my mind, saying that I'm not good enough. I shouldn't be in there. I'm not Bruce. You know, this is Bruce's gig. I'm an imposter. All these negative thoughts that people probably aren't saying, but I'm allowing to be spoken to my life through my own mind, are messing with me. So I had to find a way to breathe, and just pray even more. Like, God, just like I said, this isn't about me. I want to glorify you. I want to go up there and just do the position you put me in and do you proud, because I don't want any recognition. I don't want any accolades. You know, the Panini, I guess Panini just dropped some Voices of the Octagon card, and a buddy sent it to me. He's like, where's your card? And I'm like, I don't know. And it actually hurt me a bit, because yeah, I've been with Zuffa for 16 years, you know, 15 years. And why don't I have a card? I don't know. You know, everybody else has a card. Why am I not verified on Instagram? I don't know. Maybe I'm the only guy in UFC that's not verified, but I don't care. I have a private profile, you know, but yeah, the card thing kind of hurt my feelings a little bit, man. Not going to lie.
Joe, for the anxiety when you kind of struggle to speak for people that, you know, want to follow in your footsteps, what exactly did you do? Did it just go away by having experience, kind of gaining the confidence to get up there and do it instead of kind of shying away from the announcing?
Yeah, it was so strange, Michael. I mean, I've been doing this, God, I mean, 27 years, and that it suddenly hit me at year 25. And it hit me in like two different shows. I couldn't explain it at first. I'm like, where is this coming from? And then when I just sat back, relaxed, and started to think about it, then I could pinpoint where it was from. And I just had to, and I shared it with our DJ at UFC, AL3. And I said, bro, I don't know what's going on. And he says, Joe, you know, here's what I do. I'm the best DJ in the world. And that's what I tell myself every time I get behind the, you know, the ones and twos, that I'm the best DJ in the world. And I'm working in the best promotion in the world because I should be. And he says, you're the best ring announcer in the world, and you're working for the best promotion in the world because you should be. So you keep telling yourself you're the best in the world. I think even Rose did this when she fought the Asian girl for the belt. Do you remember this? Before her introduction, she was saying, I'm the best fighter in the world. I'm the best fighter in the world. She just kept repeating. And these words of affirmation that we need to speak to ourselves, that we do deserve to be here, that we do belong here, that we are worthy of the position we're in. Those are the words we need. We don't need the naysayers. We don't need the voices in our head telling us that we're not, because we are. We're perfectly and wonderfully made, you know, and God doesn't make mistakes. So we're all here for a reason and a purpose. So that's what I had to realize. Again, after 25 years, I had to realize that I'm in this position because I'm supposed to be, and I should be. So I just slow my breathing down, deeper breaths, and positive thoughts.
How was working over at Fight Island?
It was great, man. I mean, the food was fantastic. The first trip over to Abu Dhabi was, I was there, you know, 19 days. And oh my gosh, dude, I went with the intention of losing weight, and I probably came back with 10 extra pounds. but the food was incredible. I mean, we ate so well. Second time I was there, 27 days. And just a really nice experience. Really nice. Of course, it was a long time to be gone away from the wife and the kids, but it was one of those things where you will never forget if you were a part of it. you know, and if anybody could pull it off, it would be UFC and it would be Dana White that was able to secure that facility and just be able to continue on with the promotion that needed to continue on for people. I think we all just kind of, we got so sad as a world, as a population, that we needed sport. You know, it's like you realize, man, I miss this. I don't care if it's badminton. I wanted to watch anything, you know, other than the constant negative news about the pandemic and the death toll and, you know, the cases. It's like, we need positive, man. We can't continue down this road. And praise God, Dana White, man. And I told him, I said, dude, thank you. You have no idea how much I appreciate you. And I know millions of people also feel the same way.
What's it like working for, you know, two big names like Dana White and Oscar De La Hoya?
Dana's so awesome. And I just, I would probably do anything for that promotion, for UFC. They've treated me so well. There's so much love there and appreciation. You know, it just makes it easy to go to work. It makes it enjoyable. And there's, you know, you would think, well, the boss is cage side, you know, there's an anxiety that sets it, but no, it's not like that. He's a normal, regular dude, just in an awesome position for a great promotion. Oscar's the same way, you know, despite whatever goes on, you know, in his personal life, as a boss, you know, I've never had any issues with him. You know, he's not really hands-on. You know, sometimes he'll get behind me if it's a main event, like a big one. He's like, come on, man, bring it tonight, Joel, bring it. I'm like, yeah, I got it. Thanks. Extra pressure. That's all I wanted. But, you know, you keep in mind that, look, this isn't about me. I'm a glorified name caller. And I just happened to work for two of the best promotions in their sport, in their field, you know, in the world. So it's a blessing. And I don't take that lightly.
For your pay, Joe, does it differ? Like, say you do a fight night, you do a normal card and you do a pay-per-view. Is it more for like a pay-per-view? And is it by how many, are you paid by events or how many fights you announce?
No, it's the same. I can do a backyard UFC or I can do a 100,000 seat arena and it's the same for me. So yeah, it doesn't change.
You've also worked Cage Warriors. What was it like watching someone like Conor McGregor, you know, grow from being in Cage Warrior to the superstar that he is now? And could you tell, did he have that, you know, something about him?
It's hard for me to look at somebody and say, oh God, this guy's gonna be a superstar. And I hadn't seen somebody that I thought would be a superstar until Jose Aldo. And I remember being in Hollywood, Florida at WEC, and he had just dismantled somebody. And I'm like, this dude is legit. Like, he's going to be a champ and he's going to be a champ for a long time. And I was actually with Uriah at the time, Faber, and said that to him. And I didn't want to take it away from Uriah. Uriah was, you know, the face of WEC for a very long time. And I hold those guys in high regard, you know, all the alpha male guys. I feel like we grew up together in the sport. And I'm still happy to see them every now and then. We get some little WC reunions inside the UFC octagon, which is great. And of course, I mean, a lot of them are coaching guys now. So, I mean, there's lots of love and hugs that continue, with those fellas. But with Conor, you know, you could sense something was going to happen. Something good was going to happen because of him in the sport. And I mean, I knew him when, yeah, like you said, before the fame and notoriety came into play, and he literally freaking blew up, you know. And I remember watching his first UFC, and I just, you know, I had a Twitter back then. I said, welcome to the life of Conor McGregor, you know, like world, because it gets better. I know it's going to get better. I mean, the dude's, you can't deny he's super talented. He talks himself into some big money paydays.
Joe, you're in the ring, or the cage, sorry, for the ring walks. Are there any ring walks that you can remember that kind of gave you goosebumps?
I liked Mark Hunt. It was in New Zealand, and he came out with the All Blacks, the footballers, and they led the way. And the dance they do, you know, it's just like, oh my gosh, have you've seen it, right? Where they get in there, and it's just so intimidating. And man, I got chills watching that one. I was like, dude, this is so sick. You know, and it's in New Zealand. Everybody's going nuts and just loved it. So for me, yeah, that was awesome. And then the electricity in the crowd when we did WC in Sacramento and Faber came out, he was the main on that one. And that for me was the first time I had felt that kind of energy anywhere. Like you could feel it just pulsing through your body. And yeah, I mean, it's like you have to check and see if your heart's beating. You know your heart's beating, but you can't even feel it because you're just like, what's going on, man? This is crazy. So you know, you, as an announcer, you got to be careful of how much energy you put out there, you know, vocally, because you can just overshoot, you know, you're up a whole nother octave and you start screaming, you know, and nobody wants to hear a screamer.
Do you have any favorite fighters to watch?
Any of our WC guys. I think we had the greatest crop of Bantams, Feathers, and Lights on the planet. And those that are still going on, I love to watch them. I love Cowboy. I always enjoyed watching Faber, Chad, you know, Mendez, Cub Swanson, buddy of mine. Love to watch him fight. I don't like to announce his fights because you never want to see your buddies, you know, take an L. Any of these guys, though, I mean, it's like don't make friends in this game because your heart's gonna break, you know, when they lose. Lance Palmer, he's a buddy of mine, and you know he's had kind of a tough run in PFL these last 2 years, and we just talked after his last fight, and I'm just trying to encourage him, you know, and keep him positive, because you know I think that as an athlete, you strive for the absolute top. If you're not trying to become a champion, then what are you doing it for? If you don't want to be the best, then why even try? And with Lance to be at the top for 2 seasons in PFL, and then now he's got to fight hard to make his way into a playoff. I think it can mess with your mind. Like, am I done? That type of attitude. But I believe in him, and that's what I told him. I said, look, I believe in you, and I know you believe in yourself. You know what it takes to become a champion. So get out there and do it. You know, no pity parties here. Let's get to work.
Is that
not that I'm a motivational speaker of any sort, but I like to just encourage people, encourage, you know, friends, encourage kids. I love speaking to the youth about choices and in life and the consequences. You'll either have good consequences or you'll have bad ones, and truly they will be up to you. Ultimately, it will be up to you what happens in your life.
Maybe you should do that as a side gig, motivational speaking.
No, like I said, I'm not a motivational speaker. Sometimes I have a couple of good things to say, but you know, it's from experience, and it's from believing in people and believing in yourself. But yeah, I do love to talk to kids, though. I like to encourage people.
Something you just said there, Joe. Do you try not to get too close to fighters then for that reason?
Or? No. I don't put up any barriers. When they are, if I am presenting them, and you know, I don't have favorites. I don't show favoritism. I don't give one guy a better name introduction than the other. Because I'm not up there to be bipartisan. I'm up there to be, you know, equally yoked and give them the same, whether it's fight one or it's the main event. I want to give them everything I got every time I, you know, say a word comes out of my mouth.
other than the US, Joe, do you have a favorite country that you've worked in?
I love Stockholm, Sweden. It's absolutely beautiful. Springtime. Singapore is probably the smartest designed country I've ever been to. There's no traffic, tons to eat, and everything's available to you. So it's really cool. I'm a food guy, if you haven't told, can't tell yet. I love good food. And I think Queensland, Australia, surfer's paradise was beautiful. Love it.
How about the different crowds you've worked in? Because I've never experienced it myself, but I know that, you know, like in Japan, they're very quiet and they'll just clap. What do you think about the different crowds?
Yeah, I mean, speaking of that, like London, the British fans are incredible. I mean, they have a song for everything, and they're constantly having fun. You know, I know they're all heavily intoxicated for the most part, but what a joy, man! I mean, the energy in there is incomparable. You really can't equate it to anything else in the U.S. Our fans just aren't like that. I feel like we always need to be entertained as an American audience, but the British, the way they love their sport and their sporting events, their competitors, is I've never seen anything like it. It to me is just like the greatest.
And finally, how about a favorite venue?
Favorite venue. That's a good one. I mean, I've been to so many cool ones. That's a tough one, bro. I think a full arena of anybody is a great. The O2 is really cool. Actually, you know what? Yeah, probably the O2 because of the fans. I did a David Haye fight back there a few years ago, and yeah. And I can't say enough good about the British fans.
You actually worked as a ring announcer for DirecTV in the MMA drama Kingdom.
That's correct.
How did that come about?
Mike Beltran's a buddy of mine, a referee, and he had recommended me for that show before it had even launched. And for whatever reason, I wasn't selected. And they used some other fella. And then I got called to do a spot, one episode early on, and then the finale. And then when I did the finale, I was out there for 3 days and just had a great time, man. And I didn't even realize the show was so widely appreciated, which was shocking to me. Not that it really mattered. I mean, heck, dude, I would do anything. I would announce pretty much anything. So, but yeah, it was fun, man. And the crew was fantastic. Frank Grillo, I mean, just a true pro. So that was a neat experience. I did a Korean movie shortly after that one called Divine Fury. And it's 100% Korean. So I'm definitely subtitled over there somewhere in Korea. Those opportunities are few and far between. I don't get a lot of those, but when they come, it's always like, wow, man, mind blowing, you know. You know why though? Because the food is so good on set.
How did you decide on your famous catchphrase, "Are you ready"?
Well, it used to be, "Are you ready?" It's now "If you are ready." And that was, I think I had a trademark dispute over that for a while. And I didn't get the approval on it, so I just changed it around. So that's where the "Make some noise if you are ready" came from. Mm. How did I come up with it? It was "Are you ready?" Because I liked it, you know, and I've been doing it for like years and years, even in baseball and in basketball. I did college basketball, even "Here We Go." I wish I had trademarked "Here We Go" when I started saying it. because I think Bud Light eventually trademarked it. But, you know, I don't know where it came from. But I mean, no, it doesn't matter, because nobody's ever going to top the Rumble. You know, we're gonna continue to try, I think, as a human race to do that, because so much money's been made off of that. But, you know, I honestly, I don't hold those things in high value anymore. You know, I used to try to come up with the next big words to be trademarked so I could get rich. You know, I was chasing something I shouldn't, you know, and that's the compensation. We all want to be compensated for what we do, but when it's your only goal, it's like, that's not good. My goal in life is not to become rich and famous. It's quite opposite. I want to be true to myself, true to my family, to my kids. I want to be an example for my kids to grow up and aspire to, not necessarily be, but a way to carry themselves the way that I saw, you know, my grandfather and my dad, you know, how they lived their lives, and they were never without, and I don't believe we'll ever be without, because God always provides, you know, and it might not be what we want, but we're always going to have what we need. So try to stay balanced in that regard in my life.
Do you have a bucket list, you know, things that you'd like to do, you know, job-wise, like events you'd like to announce, countries you'd like to visit?
Well, I always wanted to do bare knuckle. I've had a few people reach out offering opportunities, but nothing's ever panned out. But on my bucket list, honestly, is the Olympics. I want to announce any event in the Olympics. Underwater basket weaving, I don't care. I will... You know, I don't care what it is. I've always wanted to announce the Olympics.
But it's in LA in a couple of years.
Yeah, I think 28. So if you know anybody out there, let them know I'm interested. Mm-hmm. And whatever they need, I'll be there.
I saw in a previous interview that you actually got a phone call from the WWE that you missed. You had a chance to
I did. Oh, dude, I know. It was just awful timing, because I always have my phone on me, and I had my phone on me. Unfortunately, I was up in the woods for a few days, and I get home and I had the voicemail from a guy who was my agent, and he says, I call him. I'm like, "What's up, Paul?" He goes, "Oh, WWE called." I'm like, "Great." And he's like, "Yeah, no, they already cast the guy. So you missed that one." I'm like, "Dude, come on, bro." But it would have been sweet. It would have been sweet.
Doing the research for the event, I put your name into YouTube, and one, I think it was the most popular video, was you and Herb Dean having that little dispute, shall we say, in the in the octagon. 5.2 million views, I think. Do you want to just set the record straight on that one?
I mean, yeah, I talk to Herb all the time. I'm like, bro, our freaking video is up over 5 million views now. He's like, I can't believe people, dude. Because Herb and I, dude, we've known each other since my first WECs. We've known each other 17 years. And we get along great. We go to dinner, and it was just, for whatever reason, that moment, the production truck's in my ear saying, "We need to know what it is. Is it a no contest? Is it a draw? Or what's the decision? What's this?" And I'm like, "Okay, I'm gonna ask him. So I go over, I'm like, "Herb, I need to." And he's like, "Hold up, let me do what I'm doing here, you know?" And I'm like, Yeah. I mean, look, they're in my ear, you know. So I explained to him afterwards. He goes, "Yeah," he says, "I know how they are." He's like, and I didn't mean anything like towards you negatively. And we never thought anything more of it after that. Until somebody I was doing an interview with brought it up. And I was like, "What are you talking about?" And they're like, "Oh yeah, dude, look on YouTube." So I pulled it up and I said, "You gotta be kidding me." Like, you know, people just don't know. So there's the truth behind it. And we still laugh about it. I mean, Herb and I will freestyle in the cage. You know, if a beat comes on, we'll just start dropping rhymes, you know, because we're just silly like that. Or dance moves, you know, like the kid in play. People just don't know. Like, they see what they see on TV, and that's all they have. you know, but it's all out of context. There's so much more that goes on relationship wise. You know, you would be amazed at how many of us are just all buddies, you know, from judges to refs to production crew, how we all roll together. It's a small family and we're close knit. And it's one of those things like we kind of either have to be, you know, or don't, you know, you're either hanging out or you're not hanging out. But we see each other so much and, you know, there's hugs that go around and there's goodbyes and, you know, and see you next times.
It's because there's pretty much an event every week now in the UFC.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's a very busy promotion, necessarily needs to be. We have a lot of guys on the roster that need fights and I think the demand is still out there for content, you know, and I heard years ago, like, oh, it's going to be oversaturated. Come on, man. I mean, baseball's on every single day for 7 months. You want to talk about saturation, you know? And like Dana said in videos, you know, that fighting's in our DNA, you know, he believes, and I believe too, that combat sports were the first sport, you know, combat was the first sport. And I still believe that, you know, for whatever reason, we as human beings enjoy watching this stuff, you know, and when you get to the level of UFC or professional boxing, if you've never done it before and you watch it and then you go try to do it, then you have a whole nother perspective and appreciation for what these guys are all about. And that's a testament to the work and fortitude that these guys put into their careers.
Well, Joel, one question I always like to finish up on. Somebody that's listening to this that wants to follow you into being, you know, a sports announcer, what advice would you give them?
The best advice I can give you is to, first of all, matriculate through some type of education system, whether it's tech school and become an electrician or a plumber, or it's actual university and get a degree in a field, but have a career. Have a career first, and then let this be a hobby, because it's ebbs and flows, it's ups and downs, and the ambiguity of when's my next meal coming, you know, or when's my next show. And I mean, when my wife and I were first really getting into this, I said, man, if I could just get one show a month, you know, and I think I was making maybe $700 a month, we didn't need a whole lot, but if I can just get seen once a month, get a show once a month, I'll be so happy, you know. And then things started to really pick up. You know, I would like to have just one show a month now. and I do. I mean, I'll never complain about the amount of shows that I have. You know, the greater the better. And my kids get it. They understand what I do. They've been raised in it. And, you know, thankfully we have technology today that I may be physically absent, but I'm still present, you know, because of FaceTime or, you know, any other type of digital progress we've made in the world, we can still be a part of our kids' days. I've done homework with my son, you know, on FaceTime. So thank you, technology.
And lastly, if you want to tell everybody where they can find you on social media handles, anything, you've got any announcements coming up?
Social media, you won't find me. So if you find an account that is me, it's not me. I don't exist in the social media platforms other than Instagram, which is private. And it's mainly just for my friends and people in the sport. So yeah, Instagram would probably be the only way, and that's Joe A. Martinez, or LinkedIn, just to network. And it's how I meet a lot of different ring announcers or aspiring ring announcers.
Any shows you've got coming up that they'll see you on?
Yeah, we've got UFC on Saturday, Holly Holm and Vieira fight. Then I'll be off for a couple weeks, and then I'm actually going to Austin June 18th for UFC. I have June 4th UFC, June 10th Cage Warriors in San Diego, and June 25th I'm doing Polaris Jiu-Jitsu in Wales.
Are you doing Are you doing June 11th Golden Boy at Honda Center?
I'm planning on it. Haven't found out yet, but I'm planning on it. Yeah.
And you can find us at TLRMMA on Instagram and Twitter. And be sure to join us next time. This is The Last Round.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Last Round MMA Podcast. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes and interviews. In the meantime, follow The Last Round MMA on Twitter and Instagram at TLRMMA.